This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Than it has been over the last 2 weeks. But nevertheless, we're going to come out with some important understandings. Firstly, we're going to tie together two themes that I've been busy on for the last couple of weeks. That is, the theme of learning, of knowing how to learn and what learning is and the different levels of learning. That's number one. And number two, the theme of the Jew's relationship to his material world. How do we relate to money, to earning a living, to possessions, to wealth, materialism, and so on. And we've spent quite a lot of time on each of those themes, and tonight we're going to tie up those two themes. The main philosophic problem in this area is the following. There's no question that one has to earn a living. There's no question that according to the Torah one has to earn a living. The question is that a lechatchila dikah thing or a b'dieved dikah thing? In other words, is it specifically designed that the Ribbono Shel wants us to earn a living as part of our Torah, as part of what we should be doing? Or is it something that, b'dieved, since you need to earn a living and imein kemach ein Torah, if there's no bread in the house, there's no Torah in the house, so you've got to have bread in the house, so you've got to go out and work for it, that's it. What's the nafkimina? What difference does it make? Well, first of all, there's a very big difference in terms of one's attitude to one's work. But more important than that, or equally important to that, is the difference of does one just work enough to earn sufficient to stay alive, or does one take it a bit more seriously than that? So there's a philosophic difference in the way we look at this problem, and there's a practical difference in the way we look at this problem. Now, contrary to what many people think, this isn't a dispute. There is a dispute, actually. There's a machlokas as to what the situation is and how one relates to this. And contrary to what many people think, the dispute didn't arise in the last couple of years between me and my friends on the hill. This is a dispute which has been going on for many, many thousands of years, and in fact is a machlokas tanoim. It starts with the tanoim already. But there's a machlokas, there's a difference of approach in this whole matter. And it all revolves around the understanding of the first few psukim of the second paragraph of the Shema. That's what it is, in terms of the way we read and translate, understand those first few psukim of the second paragraph of the Shema. On that depends the whole Torah attitude to earning a living. It's as simple as that. Although the Gemara records the view of Rabbi Yishmael first, I'm going to learn the view of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai first. This is a machlokes Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, and I'm going to record the view of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai first. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer, this is in Gemara in Brochus Daf Lamed Hey Omer Bez. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says, "Efshar Adam Choresh b'Shas Harisha v'Zorea b'Shas Zeria v'Kotze b'Shas Ketziro." The dash b'shas disho, the zore b'shas haruah. Is it possible that a man is expected to plow at the time of plowing, to plant at the time of planting, to reap at the time of reaping, to thresh at the time of threshing, and to winnow when the wind is blowing? Torah matahayaleo. When is anybody going to learn Torah? What's going to happen? People are going to be busy in the summer and in the winter and in the spring and the autumn. There's always something to do in the field. There's always something to do in the business. When is anybody going to get a chance to learn Torah? So Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai holds that there is therefore no heter. There is no permission even, never mind no mitzvah, but it is not permitted to go and earn your living. So what do you eat? It's very simple. Don't forget, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai is the one who lived in the cave for so many years while the Romans were busy chasing him. So he's talking practically, he knows it's possible. It's very simple. When the Jews are doing the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam, melachtam nases al yedei acherim. Other people work for them. Shneimar, as it says in Yeshayahu, va'amdu zorim v'ro tzemchei. And strangers will get up and they'll look after your sheep for you. That's it. You'll have computers and mini computers and you'll have all sorts of things organized. It won't be necessary to spend that amount of time on earning a living if you're doing the Rotzon of Hashem. ובזמן שאין ישראל עושים רצון של מקום, and when you, the Jews are not doing the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam, melachta nasas al yedei atzman, then they have to work for themselves. Shenemar, as it says in the Shema, v'asafta d'goncha, you will have to go and collect your own wheat in the field. You will have to go and reap and harvest your own corn in the field. V'loi oid? We'll leave out the v'loi oid for the moment. That's the view of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. So Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says, ideally, it should not be necessary to go out at all and earn one's living. Practically, people aren't doing what they should be doing, God isn't playing his share in providing us with a living, and therefore you have to go out and work, but don't think that's an ideal. That's not an ideal at all. You should be learning day and night. That's it. Part of his view is based on the pasuk of Asafta Degonecha. You will go out and you will collect your own corn. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai learns that pasuk in Shema as a klala, as a curse, not as a blessing. Right? It's not, if you do the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam, then it'll be wonderful, I'll bring rain and all the rest, and you'll go out and you'll collect your corn. That's the way we normally read the Shema. Rabbi Shimon Yochai says, no. If you're not keeping the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam properly, then you'll go out and you'll have to bring in the corn yourself. That's very difficult to understand. What does he say? But the Torah says, you go out and collect your corn and gather in your corn and your wine and your oil, that's a curse. But who are we talking about? We're talking about a man, and it will be, we read in the Shema, if you listen to my mitzvahs, those mitzvahs which I command you today, to love the Ribbono Shel Olam, and to serve him, and not just to love and serve him the way we love and serve him, but the chol levavchem. You love and serve the Ribbono Shel Olam with all your heart, all your feelings, all your emotions. You're involved, it's important, it's vital. And you'll give your life for the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's the kind of person we're talking about. Somebody who without hesitation will give his life for the Ribbono Shel Olam. Then what will happen? Then you'll jolly well have to go and collect your own corn. What do you mean? So what are we supposed to do? But that's what Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says. What's wrong with this man we're talking about? What's wrong with him that he deserves what Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai classifies as a bit of a curse? Yes, God will bring rain and all the rest of it. God will do his share. The produce will be in the garden. The wheat fields will be full of wheat. But you're going to have to work for yourselves. It's not going to come on its own. What did he do wrong? Says the Maharsho, if you look at that first sentence of the second paragraph of the Shema and you compare it with the first sentence of the first paragraph of the Shema, you notice that one word is discreetly left out. In the first paragraph it says, Ve'ahavtos Hashem Elokecha, and you must love the Lord your God, v'chol levavcha, with all your heart, u'v'chol nafshecha, and with all your soul. That means you'll give your life for him, u'v'chol moedecha, and also with all your money, and you'll give whatever possessions you've got for the Ribbono Shel Olam. Here it leaves that last one out. It says you will love the Ribbono Shel Olam with all your heart and with all your soul, but it doesn't say with all your money. So in the first paragraph of the Shema and in the second paragraph of the Shema, we are talking about two different people. The first paragraph of the Shema, we're talking about a person who not only will he give all his life for Torah, and not only does he serve the Ribbono Shel Olam with all his love and with all his heart and with everything he's got, but he would also give all his money for Torah. In the second paragraph of the Shema, we're dealing with a very strange human being, it comes out. A person who loves the Ribbono Shel Olam and serves him, and he's up in the morning for davening early, and it's b'chol levavcha, and he's got no yetzer hara that distracts him from it, because even his yetzer hara, even his distractions are harnessed into his avodas Hashem, to serving the Ribbono Shel Olam, and whatever he does is right, and he wants it to be right, and he loves the Ribbono Shel Olam, and he davens with kavona, and everything is wonderful, and he serves the Ribbono Shel Olam b'chol nafshichem. If he were asked to give his life for Torah, he wouldn't hesitate. That's it, finish, no problem. But his money, that much. Very strange kind of person. Who's ever seen such a person before? The Gemara classifies him as a person that his money is dearer to him than himself. Very funny kind of being, but that's the person being talked about in the second paragraph of the Shema. Very frum, he keeps all the mitzvahs with the right feelings and the right attitudes, everything wonderful. One thing, give all his money for the Torah, that much. That's also very difficult to understand. What did he do wrong? You know, we learn Torah and we keep the Torah. As the Gemara says, Lo nitnu mitzvos elo l'tzaref bohen es abriyos. The mitzvahs were given to us to purify us, to refine us, to make us greater. That means that by keeping the Torah, and we learnt the Rambam last week, you remember, it said also the mitzvahs are there to refine you, to make you a better person. All the mitzvahs. So by keeping all the mitzvahs, you should be becoming a better person. And you're learning Torah as well. The Hayayim Shema Tishmu El Mitzvah means you're learning Torah. You're occupied in the learning of Torah. And you're keeping Torah. And all the mitzvahs you're keeping. And you're doing it with love and with dedication. And you would give your life for it. How come such a man won't give his money for it? What's gone wrong? There's something he's doing. His system of education is somehow not taking him to the end. There's something wrong in his method of education. Because normally if one's keeping all the mitzvahs and one's doing what one should be doing, one should be becoming a better and better person. And here we're talking about a real so-and-so. A miser, he won't even give his money for Torah. His life he'll give, but not his money. His money is dearer to him than his life. What kind of person is this? How did he become such a person? How can you have a frum person who's learning and is involved in Torah? How can you have somebody of this kind of level, of this kind of stature? Very simple. Because how does he learn? He only listens. Now we've discussed over the last couple of weeks different types of learning. And we've said that the very first level in learning and the very first stage of learning, and that stage on which everything else depends, is shmiya. Just hear what is being said. Don't impose your own preconceived ideas on what's being said. Don't close your mind to possibilities. Just analyze carefully, see that you understand what is being said. And revise it, and revise it, and revise it, until you know with absolute clarity what is being said. Before you start philosophizing, and before you start giving reasons, and before you go into the thing fully, and before you try and see whether it matches up with your views or it doesn't, quite independently of your views, the first step of learning is shmir. Just hear what it says. That's the very first thing. But then comes other steps. Then come other steps. After the shmir we learned last week, not only must you keep going over your Torah and revising it and knowing it, but you must make new Torah, you must be creative in your learning. You must come up with new ideas, you must see new angles and nuances in your learning. You must see it from your own individual point of view. You must see it as nobody else has ever seen it before. That's also part of the chiyuv, part of the obligation of learning. That's the only difference between this man and anybody else. He's keeping all the mitzvahs, fantastic, so he's frum. And he's keeping them with tremendous emotion. So he's emotionally involved. And he's learning Torah. But only with Shmir. He's only accumulating facts. That's it. I say only, one must have it in perspective. It's very important to be accumulating facts. It's very important to be learning b'shmir, learning by hearing. But he's not taking it any further. That's all he's doing. What difference does that make? It makes a very big difference. Collecting facts is an accumulative system of learning. We've discussed the accumulative and the living, the two different types of being. There's nothing existentially exciting in the accumulation of facts. You don't fulfill yourself by accumulating facts. You don't feel alive by accumulating facts. Yes, you've got more skills. It's like buying more tools. You can do more things. You know more things. But you don't feel the thrill of being alive by accumulating facts. So you've heard another thing, and another thing, and another thing. Very nice. But that isn't what makes you feel alive. You feel alive when you're being creative. What does feeling alive mean? Feeling alive means that you feel that what you're doing is part of a huge scheme, that it has meaning, that it has purpose, and that it's eternal. If we felt that what we were doing was going to be erased the moment we died, that there was going to be nothing left of what we've built up during our lifetime, if that's what we felt, it would be very difficult to go on. It's terribly important for a person to feel that he's involved in Nitzchias, that what he's involved in is permanent, it's there to stay, it's always there. Now all the philosophic problems of the modern age, and in fact probably through many of the ages, are problems caused by people who don't feel Nitzchias. They don't feel themselves occupied in something of eternal value. So come all the philosophic questions. Am I alive? What a question. Imagine such a thing. Am I alive? But that's one of the basic philosophic questions. Do I exist? Imagine such a crazy thing as a philosopher sitting and spending his life on the question of do I exist? And Nebuch, the pathos of it, spends his lifetime proving to himself that he exists. He proves it on paper. And at the end he still doesn't feel that he exists. Doesn't feel. He's proved himself. Look at the proof. So I must exist in that case. If that's what it says. I've worked it out logically. I must exist. But the fact that he could ask such a question means that he doesn't feel alive. And it's not just the philosopher. The philosophers of our age are expressions of what's going on in our society. People don't feel alive. And don't think it's only in an irreligious environment that people don't feel alive. It's in a religious environment as well. They're not infused with the thrill and the joy of living. Why not? It's accumulative. More mitzvahs, more pages of Gemara, more chapters. It's more. They're accumulating. That doesn't fulfill a human being. That doesn't make a human being feel satisfied, creative, using his intellect, using his character, using his intelligence, relating to the Ribbono Shel Olam. There's only one way you can relate to that, the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that's to do the kind of thing he does. And that's the only way you can relate to anybody, actually. When you're in Rome, you must do as the Romans do, not only so that you don't get thrown out of Rome, but if you want to get a feeling of what's going on in Rome, you must do what the Romans do. You must sit in their little cafes, and you must go to their museums, and you must go into their homes. You must do what they do, and you'll get a feeling of what's going on in Rome, and the same in Athens or any other city. If you want to get a feel of that city, you must do things with them, the things they are doing. If you want to get a feel of the Ribbono Shel Olam, you can't carry on your own little life and think that you're going to get some kind of a feeling of what godliness is all about. You've got to do the kind of thing God does. God creates. That's his job. That's what he does. God is a creator. So you've got to become a creator. And we learned this morning that there's only one field in which you can really be creative. Created ab initio. And that's in Torah itself. When you're creative in Torah, we'll discuss still what that means when you're creative in Torah. And we'll extend it from Torah to other things. But basically, when you're creative, then you feel alive. You've made something, and it's something that you don't question yourself. When you're busy learning a piece of Gemara, and you've suddenly seen something there that not only have you never seen before, but you're quite confident nobody else has ever seen before. And there's this flash of light, there's a whole new vista is open in front of you. At that moment, you sit and wonder, am I alive? Do I exist? Let me try and prove to myself whether I exist. Well, because I feel I must be. It looks very good, but again, am I really alive? You don't ask that kind of question when you're being machadish. At a time that you're being creative, that you're making something new, that you're developing new ideas altogether, that you're breaking barriers and crossing into new vistas. At that moment, nobody asks whether they're alive. At that moment, they're involved in eternity because they're involved in godliness. They're holding the Ribbono Shel Olam's hand, so to say, and they're taking strides together with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Who's going to question whether I'm alive? So here we've got a person who's Bahaya, Im Shomer, Tishmur Mitzvah. He listens to the mitzvahs. But he doesn't do. What's the result of that? If you don't feel alive, you've got to try and convince yourself that you're alive. Now, if you're a philosopher, then you convince yourself with a pencil and paper that you're alive. You prove it. It doesn't feel very convincing, but if you study it intellectually, it's convincing, so you assume you must be alive if that's what it says on the paper. But if you're not a philosopher, there's only one other way to do it, and that's through materialism. There are actually two other ways to do it. One is through hedonism. That is, you indulge in pleasure. Because again, when you're happy, when you're indulging in pleasure, you also don't question whether you're alive. You can feel you're alive. So you go after all sorts of crazy pleasures, whatever you can find. You eat and you become obese, and you do all sorts of things to convince yourself that you're really alive, and you all crazy things that people find to do. There's nothing wrong with pleasure. If pleasure is like salt and pepper, you know, you put salt and pepper to make your food tasty, but you can't live on salt and pepper. And these people haven't got the food, so they run after the salt and pepper. And the trouble with salt and pepper is you can eat it, but firstly, it doesn't even taste as good as you thought it did. When you were planning all the pleasure, it sounded so fantastic. When you get there, it's a little bit sordid, actually, and not very fulfilling at all. And at the end of it, you're back to the same question. You don't feel alive anymore at all. And you've got to start all over again. So you get into a vicious circle of the pursuit of pleasure, of hedonism. The other method that one can use to try and convince oneself that one's alive is materialism. And as you prop yourself up, you buy things, and you buy a big house, and you buy a few cars, and you go overseas many times, and you go on the QE2, and you do all sorts of things that nobody else has done before. If you can't be mechadish, a chidush that nobody has conceived of before, if you can't come up with a new idea, with a new angle, if you can't see the world in a new light, at least do things that nobody else has done before. So you go and you climb Everest, and you take a new ship that's come out, and you see a new movie the moment it's come out, and you if there's a new hotel that opens in Bophuthatswana, you run off to be the first people who are there. That's it. That's what you do to make sure that you're different and unique, because you've done what nobody else has done. It doesn't convince. But it's a pursuit, it's a pathetic pursuit to try and stay alive, to try and convince yourself that you are really unique and you are really special. It doesn't help much. So such a person, for him, money, materialism, is not a means to an end. It's not a means to some greater purpose. the materialism then becomes the purpose. That's it. You might say that sounds a bit far-fetched. Who regards materialism as a purpose? But when you see how people work, I'm not talking about people who work for a living. A person is working hard for a living, it's sad. A person has a heart attack because he's working for a living, it's sad. But people aren't having heart attacks because they're working for a living. It's not the poor who have heart attacks. You never hear the street cleaners never who have heart attacks. It's the people who are building empires who have the heart attacks. What that work? Up 6 o'clock in the morning they're there. 9 o'clock at night they're there. On Shabbos they're there. On Sunday they're there. The Olam Haba they give for their business. The Olam Haba they give for their business. The world to come and this world. Everything they give for their business. And what's it all about? Money. It's an end in itself. To build up the business. It's permanent. It's nitzchius. That gives me a feeling that when I go there'll be something here. A monument. So he spends Nebuchadnezzar his whole life building his tombstone. So that when he dies there should be something left on his grave. The whole life from the beginning, and he works and he works, and he died 20 years earlier because he was so busy building his tombstone. What's it all about? What's it for? And what's the purpose? What is it? So that the materialism itself should be the thing that convinces me that I'm alive. It's not that he needs the money or that he's worried about security. It's not just the fun of business, because nobody has heart attacks for fun. It's, they'd always tell you, oh, it's just the fun and all that, and such a fun. Oh yes, fun. You know, 10% of the time it's fun. The other 90% of the time it's not fun. It's harrowing. People do it. Because without that, they would collapse. Only very recently, the chairman and the managing director of a company retired. And his friends said he won't last long. Young man, not an old man. His friends told me at the time, I don't know what got into him. He won't last. He died a few weeks later. Sure he died. What else is there to live for? Man's given his life for the building of an empire. Hands it over to his son, very nice. And now? Now I'm going to retire and enjoy myself and relax. But doing what? You can't live in a meaningless world. You were created. Why did God create you, Mr. So-and-so, to build the empire? Well, it's done now. You've handed it over. Now what does he need you for? Answer is, he doesn't. And the person either dies physically, which happens very often, or he starts cracking up and he gets ill and he gets senile. It's the end. The moment he's given up his working life. That's what he's lived for. But if I go overseas for my business, they're very wonderful to me. Whatever I want to spend, whatever money I want to spend, provided it's for the business, there's no question asked as to why that money was spent. It's very wonderful. I can come back with a first class airway ticket and say, why first class? And I'll say, you know, I was really very tired from the day before and I had a meeting the next day as soon as I arrived. I had a sleep and the plane was full. Pleasure. Nothing wrong with that. And you go to a deluxe hotel instead of a normal 5-star hotel. You tell them also, you know, the 5-star hotels were full, but it meant going to a 4-star hotel. I had to interview somebody at the hotel. It's not nice, 4-star hotel. It's such an important company. So I thought I'd better take the deluxe hotel. Fine, okay. No questions asked. But not for myself. I want to buy something for myself, or it's for my own comfort. I want to spend a weekend in a nice hotel. That's your own business. It's pleasure, but that you pay for. Obviously, they're right. The Ribbono Shel Olam works in the same way. He says, look, you're working for me. You need money for me. I'll organize it. Whatever you want, you'll have. But it's an end in itself. You need money to make yourself comfortable. You need money not to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam, but that's what you're living for. Don't come and ask me for the money. Go out and work for it yourself. That's the view of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. So, Yaim Shamayat Yishmeret. You're one of these people who are accumulating. And it's interesting that people who are materialist in material things are materialist in everything. Now, a materialist will go to a concert. Why did he go to the concert? Not to enjoy the music, to be able to come afterwards and say he went to such and such a concert, or to see people there or be seen there. It's for material reasons. So it's to own. He wants to possess the concert ticket. That's really what he wants. Or to possess the honor of having been seen there, or to have something to speak about. It's to have. He wants to have been at the concert. He wants to have the concert as a talking, whatever it is, but it's not to enjoy the music. And if a materialist person learns Torah, it's not to learn the Torah to have the pleasure and the thrill of learning Torah. It's to accumulate facts. He enjoys accumulating. Okay, if you're one of those people, then you're one of those people in all areas. If you're a v'hayayim shamaya, if you're listening, that means you're only hearing. And when you've heard, you know what has been said. You put that away, and now you want to know something more. That's it. You've heard the shiur on this Gemara, now let's go on to the next Gemara. Have you gone over it properly? Have you analyzed it yourself? Have you contributed something yourself to the understanding of it? Have you seen your own angle on it? No, but I've heard. Whatever it is, now let's go on. It's getting boring already. A person who gets bored with what he's already heard is a materialist. And a materialist needs money. He can be frum, he can be saintly, he can be learning in yeshiva all day, he can be in the business world all day, it makes no difference. A person who accumulates needs money, and he needs more and more and more. And what does he need it for? As an end in itself. Then I'll do my share, says the Rebbe Hashem. You're keeping my mitzvahs, you're keeping my Torah. I'll see that the rain is there when the rain has to be there, and the sun is there when the sun is there, and the produce will be in the field. You have to plant, you have to reap, you have to do the work. That's it, because it's for you. That wouldn't be the case, says Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, if you're doing the Rotzon of the Ribbono Shel, if you are fulfilling the will of God, and you only need money in order to do so. You don't need money as an end in itself. You're quite satisfied with whatever it is. You need very little. But what you need just in order to keep body and soul together. Then, says Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Safta de Ganecha doesn't apply. You won't have to go out into the field. The Ribbono Shel Olam will see that there's a carob tree in your garden and you can live on carobs. But you've got to be prepared to do that. You can't expect to live comfortably that way. The Ribbono Shel Olam will give you what you need to keep body and soul together. That's it. But your fulfillment doesn't come from your comfort and your accumulation. Your fulfillment is coming from the Torah. And that's what the Mishnah means when it says, Kachi Darko Shel Torah. This is the way of Torah. Pas b'melach toichal. You have to eat, all you have to eat is bread and salt, v'mayim b'mishura tishten, a little bit of water, v'ala aretz tishon, and you sleep on the floor. That's all you need for Torah. Then all your thrill and enjoyment comes from Torah. That the Ribbono Shel Olam will give you, says Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. As we mentioned in the beginning, he was talking from experience. And if for some peculiar reason you really genuinely need more than that, he'll give you more than that. But he won't give you anything more than you need. But if your thrill comes from learning, and you don't want to waste your time going looking for a living, and you're prepared to sleep on the floor and eat a bit of salt and water and bread, and that's what you're prepared to live on for the thrill of learning, and so as not to have to waste time in anything financial, that's fine. You can rely on the Ribbono Shel Olam, he'll give you what you need. That's how Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai learns. Rabbi Yishmael learns very differently. Rabbi Yishmael says the following, V'asafta d'gancha, says in the Torah, you must go out and earn your living. Talmud Noma, what does it come to tell you? Obviously, if the wheat is ready to be harvested, you must go out and harvest it. What does it have to tell you that you'll go out and harvest it? The Thishan Emma comes to teach you, because it says in Yoshua, Lo yomush sefer ha-toyro hazeh mipicha, this sefer Torah must never be removed from your mouth. In other words, you must always be learning, 24 hours a day. Yochol dvorim kikasovo, I might think that that is to be taken literally, as Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai in fact takes it. Talmud Lomar, no. We're taught ve'osafta d'goncho. You must go out and earn your living. Hanheg bahen minhag derech eretz. Treat your Torah in a way that involves derech eretz. Derech eretz doesn't mean the normal meaning of derech eretz of being a mensch. Well, that's very close to that. It means derech eretz, just the way the world operates. Now, Rabbi Yishmael doesn't say, from here you've got permission to go and earn a living. No. This is part of your Torah. Hanheg bahin. Treat your Torah, use your Torah with a minag derech eretz. Don't think that now I'll stop learning and I'll go and earn my living. No, says Rabbi Yishmael. Going to earn your living in fact is part of your Torah. That's hanheg bahin minag derech eretz. Going to earn your living is in fact part of learning Torah. Rabbi Shmuel comes out that it's in fact an ideal. Not that since you're not like Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, since you're not doing the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam, no, so you have to go out and earn your own living. Not at all. You've jolly well got to earn your own living, because the Ribbono Shel Olam sees that as part of your growth in Torah. That's part of your learning. That's part of being Jewish. That's part of being frum. Is operating in the world, the minag derech eretz, taking your Torah and with your Torah penetrating into the minag derech eretz, penetrating into the normal operation of the world. That's what it is to be a Jew, says Rabbi Yishmael. Now we've got to understand the Shema. What are we talking about? What about the Chol Mo'edecha? That's what it says here. We're talking about a person who's not as good as the one in the first paragraph we've already established. In the first paragraph we're talking about somebody who's prepared to give his money. And in the second paragraph we're talking about somebody who's not prepared to give his money. And on this question of giving your money, don't think it's so easy. And don't think it's so amazing that there are people who are prepared to give their lives and aren't prepared to give their money. Because giving your life is relatively easy. There are only three things for which you have to give your life. Four really. Chilul Hashem. It's causing a disgrace to the name of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Avodah Zorah, idol worship. Shpichus Damim, murder. And Giloy Arayah, sexual immorality. So if one is asked to do one of those things or lose one's life, you opt for losing your life. That's relatively easy for anybody who's emotionally involved with Yiddishkeit. But you know what the din of a Chol Moedecho is? Before that, the din is that you have to spend up to 20% of your income on a mitzvah. In other words, if you can only find an esrei at 100 rand, you're going to have to pay 100 rand to buy an esrei. And your income is more than 400 rand? No. 20% of what is 500 rand. If your income is more than 500 rand, you have to spend 100 rand on the esrog. That also is fairly easy, right? And if your income is 1,000 rand, you have to spend up to 200 rand. That's relatively easy. But when it comes to a mitzvah loita, say, when it comes to negative commandments, for example, you have to buy a suit, and all the suits have got shatnez. But over here, where a suit can be checked and corrected. So you better buy a suit without shatnez. Eventually you find the suit. The suit costs 10,000 rand. That's your life savings. You've got to sell your insurance policies. You've got to sell your house. Everything you've got to buy a suit without shatnez. The din is you have to do it. For a mitzvah, lota, say, for a negative mitzvah. So don't think we're talking about some weird kind of guy in the second paragraph of the Shema. I'm afraid that we're talking about all of us. At least certainly me. I can't say with absolute certainty that I could stand up to that nisoyon. I could give everything I had just not to do a mitzvah lo tase, not to do a negative mitzvah, and nobody would know about it. No, you get no honor for it or covet. Nobody would know that I would have to give every penny I've got so as not to do a mitzvah lo tase. Not so easy. That's the kind of person we're talking about in the second paragraph of Shema. Money is more important to me than my life. That's what it really means. To give my life for Torah, sure. To give my money for Torah, that already becomes a little bit more difficult. Because we come from an accumulative society. We come from a society where possessing is more important than living. That's what it is. We're building tombstones. To give away my tombstone, I lose my eternity. To give away my life, as long as I've got a tombstone, it's alright. As long as I've got insurance policies and my wife and family will be looked after, I don't mind giving my life. And I do all sorts of risky things in any case. But to give my money, to give away that tombstone that I've spent my whole life building, that's chas v'sholom. So the second paragraph of the Shema is much closer to us than the first paragraph. The first paragraph is the ideal, the way we've got to aim to be. But realistically, we're people of the second paragraph of the Shema. So if we're such people, how does Rabbi Yeshua learn the Shema? Rabbi Yeshua, Shimon ben Yochai, has learned it very nicely. We've come down a level from the first paragraph of the Shema. Says Rabbi Yeshua, no. Second paragraph of the Shema, not at all. We're up a level from the first paragraph of the Shema. Why? Because the first paragraph of the Shema had to tell you that you've got to serve God with your money as well. The second paragraph of the Shema doesn't even have to tell you. Who would think the man in the second paragraph of the Shema who's prepared to give his life, of course he would give every penny he's got as well. It's a much higher level than the first paragraph of the Shema. The first paragraph of the Shema would tell, not only must you give your life, but you must also be prepared to give your money. The fact that you have to say such a thing to a man means that you're talking down to him, that you're talking to someone on a very low level, or on a relatively low level, people like us. But in the second paragraph of the Shema, you don't even have to say it. You should serve God with all your heart and with all your soul. That means you've got to give your life for the Ribbono Shel Olam if necessary. And of course, obviously, that goes without saying that you give your money as well. So this is Rabbi Yeshua. We're talking about a man on a much higher level in the second paragraph than we are in the first paragraph. And therefore, when it says, V'asafta d'gonecha, that's not a punishment. And that's not a curse when it says you must go out and earn a living. We're talking about a man on the highest level of Torah achievement. About him it is said, V'yosafta d'gonecha, you also will go out and earn a living, because that's part of living a Torah life. We'll discuss it in a moment. So how does he learn V'hayayim Shema? You're such a fantastic level of Torah achievement, why do you only listen? Why aren't you mechadesh? For that Rashi gives us the answer. And in Rashi's answer, we have the secret of how to learn. In one sentence, we have the secret of how to achieve success in learning. What does Rashi say? In tishma beyoshon, tishma bechadosh. If you listen to the old, you will listen to the new. That's what he says. The Sifsei Chachomim explains it very clearly. And the Sifsei Chachomim says on this Rashi, that means, if you go over your old learning, you revise it and you revise it and you revise it, you'll be mechadosh, you'll find new things in it. That's how to be mechadosh. That's how to be creative in your learning. Don't think you're creative in your learning by learning something new every day. No, you're creative in your learning when you go over the old stuff. And when you abandon the going over of the old stuff, And remember Rabbi Miller's shiur, which he gave here when he spoke about the difference between a man who's gone over his old stuff 100 times and 101 times, and the fact that that is a qualitative difference, not a quantitative difference. And that's the level one's talking about, hundreds of times going over one's learning, and not just going over them parrot style, but going over it clearly, as the Shema itself says, Yaviyam Shema Tishma Mitzvotai Asher Nechi Mitzavei Eschem Hayom. You've got to go over it 100th time as if it's the first time, looking at it, examining it as if you've never seen it before. Only that way will you be creative. You know, the two kinds of people in the world also is the kind of person who has to always be running around, doing new things. The kind of person we spoke about a little bit earlier. He's got to go on holiday to a different place every time. And he's got to go to a different movie every night. And he's got to always running around. And you've got another person who can look at a flower in his garden or a tree in his garden that's been there for years. And he looks at it as if he never saw it before. Looks and he studies it and analyzes it. And you say to him, but haven't you seen it before? And he says, yes, I've seen it, but I haven't seen it. Not like this. What's changed? It's the same tree. No, he's changed. And he's developing quality and creativity by looking at the same thing with more quality. And it's an unfortunate aspect of personality that when you're moving on to new things, you're missing the quality. Quality only comes by working over and over and over the old things. Yes, one has to move on at the same time, otherwise you remain an amaoritz, otherwise you just don't know anything. So at the same time, you've got to be doing new things as well. You've got to get around, there's got to be richness in your life. You've got to meet new people, do new things, see new places, learn new gemara. Sure you have to, but that's not where the quality lies, and don't fool yourself that it is. And when you feel frustrated and aggravated in your learning or in your living, don't go and look for new experiences. That's sure to kill you. That's sure to prevent you from ever feeling anything of value and quality again. If you feel frustrated, you feel that you're not alive, you feel that you're not achieving, go over the old stuff. Take an old book of your shelf that you read as a child. Read it again, Alice in Wonderland. Take one of Shakespeare's plays that you did from a trick. Do something that you know. And find things in it that you never found before. Learn it, study it, see it with your new maturity. Then you'll feel alive, because then you'll notice how you've grown. And you'll experience your growing, and you'll give expression to your growth. Then you'll achieve quality, then you'll achieve chidush, then you'll be getting something new. You've got nothing to do on a Shabbos afternoon. Don't say, what new can I learn? Go over your Gemara from the week. Go over something you heard in a shiur. Look at a Rashi that we referred to. See it yourself. Look at it as if you've never seen it before. Try and see a new angle in it that hasn't been mentioned before. And then you'll find new things in it altogether. Im shamat, im tishma b'yoshon, tishma b'chadash, is Rashi. It doesn't say, v'haya im shamata. And it will be, if you have listened to my mitzvahs. It says, im shamor, tishmu. Literally, that means, if you have listened, you will listen. That's what it means. Shamua, which is the past tense really, shama, tishmu, you will listen. Says Rashi, that's the system of learning. If you have listened, you will listen. And that answers our question on Rabbi Yishmael. We're not talking about a person who just listens. We're talking about a person who listens and listens and listens and listens and listens again until he comes out with something new. That's who we're talking about. We're talking about a Talmid Chochem in the second chapter. We're talking about somebody who is creative. We're talking about somebody who's developing new out of the old. We're talking about somebody who's seeing new things in everything around him. Although it's the same old things, he sees them anew. That's who we're talking about. That's in Shamua Tishmu. And so the machlok is the difference of opinion between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai revolves around the translation of the Hayam Shamua Tishmu. Are we talking about somebody who's just listen, are we saying he only listens? That's the trouble with him? Or do we say, no, but how does he listen? In other words, the quality of your life and the quality of your learning depends on how you listen. That's it. That's a secret to everything. How you listen. We've established in previous shiurim that the first principle is that you've got to listen. That you must hear without bias. The second principle that we are establishing now is listen and listen and listen again, each time as if you've never heard it before, and then you'll be mechadish. If you want to understand music, don't turn on Beethoven's Fifth Symphony and as you hear it starting, say, oh, I've heard this before. What else? And look again for something else. You'll never understand anything about music if you do that. And you play it, and over again. And the condition, each time as if you've never heard it before. Each time as if it's the first time nobody's heard Beethoven's Fifth Symphony before. Listen to it as if there's Beethoven sitting himself. And he's now letting the world know the Fifth Symphony, even though you know it by heart. That's how you listen to it. Then all your senses are alive. Then you're listening with originality. Then you're listening with everything you've got. And what you will only notice in it. Little notes that you didn't hear before. Phrases that you didn't notice before. Chords that are incredibly beautiful. that you simply heard in the general blur but you weren't able to pick out before. Then you feel alive. And if that's so with Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, how much more so is it with a piece of Torah? If one takes something that one's learned, and one learns it again, and one analyzes it, and looks at it carefully, the excitement, the thrill, at the little new things that you notice as you do that. And therefore it comes out that according to Rabbi Yishmael, the Osata the Gonecho, earning your living is part of your Torah. Because we're talking about a man who's on the absolute climax of halachic achievement, of Torah achievement, and nevertheless he tells the Osata de Gonecho and says, Rabbi Yishmael, that's lechatchila, that's what he's got to do, he's got to go and be Osata de Gonecho. And here, just for a few moments, I want to explain this to you. Today, if people acknowledge that there is any mitzvah in earning a living, it's explained in the following way. The reason that there's a mitzvah in earning a living is because you have to keep body and soul together. So you go out and you earn a living, and that way you can learn, you can have your Shabbos off, and you can learn on Shabbos, and you can learn in the night time, and you can keep the Torah. So it's a mitzvah to go and earn your living. But certainly if you have a fortune of money, then you don't have to go and earn your living at all, obviously. It's not quite so according to Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael sees in the Asafta de Gonecho actually a part of the fulfillment of Torah. Let's understand why. And Chaim Moshe Grudzinski says, in a beautiful little section where he's dealing with the basics of human development, at the very beginning where he's establishing what Musar is all about, what improving yourself is all about, he says the first principle is you've got to be a normal human being. That's it. If you're not a normal human being, don't start with Musa, don't start with Torah, don't start with anything. The first thing is to be normal. How do you become normal? Remember also that the Gemara defines normality by what the man in the street says about you. Right? If the man in the street says you're a Rosha, that you're wicked, you don't have to listen to him. You listen to the Shulchan Aruch. The man in the street says you're a tzaddik, you don't have to listen to him either. If you say the man in the street says you're righteous, you don't have to listen to him either. Because the man in the street knows nothing about being righteous or being wicked. But the man in the street does know an awful lot about being normal or not being normal. Because normality is defined as the ability to interrelate smoothly with the society in which you live. And if the man in the street thinks you're bats, you are bats. That's it. And that's what the Gemara says. That what you've got to look is, Ma habriyos oimrim alecha. What you've got to measure whether you're Mekadesh Hashem or you're Mechalel Hashem, to see whether you're sanctifying God's name or you're disgracing God's name. You've got to look not at what the Talmidei Chachomim say about you, not at what the frum community says about you. Ma habriyos oimrim alecha. What does the man in the street say? He says, that's a Jew. Lovely. That's nice. I didn't know the Jews were like that. That's a Kiddush Hashem. He sees you as a normal human being and on top of it Jewish. Fantastic. But if he says, is that what a Jew is being about? Who wants to have anything to do with him? Or is that what a religious Jew is being all about? Who wants to have anything to do with him? It's the man in the street. If that's his view of you, you must know that you need a lot of correction. And that in fact you're causing chilul Hashem. You're causing God's name to be disgraced in the street, and that isn't allowed. So although we don't take notice of what they say in the street about our values, we do take notice of what they say in the street about our projection, the way we come over. Do we come over as normal human beings or not? For that we ask the man in the street. So says Rabbi Chaim Moshe Grudzinski, the first thing is normality. You've got to be a normal human being. How do you develop normality? So he says, let's see how a child develops it. A child develops it through the little fights it has with its little friends. It's mine, it's yours. They hit each other and somebody lands up crying, and a skillful parent will have to teach a lesson at such a situation. Yes, it's yours, but you should let so-and-so play with it. Or, no, it's not yours, you should leave it alone, or ask so-and-so to give it to you, to let you play with it. And slowly the child develops an understanding of give and take, of recognizing another person's rights, of giving to another person, of when to take and when to give, of what is mine and what is yours. It's through these little fights that the children have. So, of course, one of the worst things that we do in this country is we have few children. And when we've already got a couple of children, chas v'sholom, the two children should share the same room. We keep them very isolated from one another and make very clear demarcations as to what is yours and what is yours. And if little Johnny's got a bicycle, then little Paulie must get another bicycle also, because they can't share the same bicycle. We're ruining everything that a child is meant to be learning when he's a child. Give Johnny the bicycle and give Paulie the truck. And Paulie must learn how to give Johnny the truck, and Johnny must learn how to give Paulie the bicycle. That's how you learn to be a mensch. That's the beginning. That's where it all starts. How does it develop further? says that Chaim Moisel Grudzinski says of Avraham Grudzinski, through business, through dealing with the wood. He says, in fact, one learns about the rights of ownership. You learn Torah, you learn about the rights of ownership. But until you've had to work for a living and spend that hard-earned money to buy something from someone else, you can't appreciate what ownership is. When I've sweated and worked for 5 years to be able to buy a motor car, then I realized that man wouldn't have sold me the motor car for less than 5 years' work. Let's say 5 years' work comes to 5,000 rand, and I take my 5 years' work in my hand, my 5,000 rand, and I buy a motor car. I've realized that I've had to slave for 5 years to persuade that man to part with his motor car. That's what it means to own. That's how important that motor car is to that dealer. But he wouldn't have parted with it for 1 rand less. Had to be 5,000 rand before he would part it. Then it means something to me. But if I got the motor car for my 21st birthday, I won't understand what it means to own a motor car. Because I don't understand what it means to win a motor car over from an owner. If I'm an employer and I don't pay my employees anything, I don't understand what it is for a man to work for me. Only when at the end of the month I look at my profits and they're very nice, and then I start handing out my wages and I suddenly see that I've got very little left, then I realize what it is to employ somebody. Then I realize what it is for my employee to give his time to me. It's all my work and it's all my capital and it's all my business that I have to pay out to him. And I understand what it is to be an employee. And if I'm an employee and I don't work hard, I don't really give of myself, I never understand what it is for the employer to pay me at the end of the month. All I wait for is my wages, and I strike if they're not enough. And then when they are enough, I say, I put them in my pocket. But to understand what it is, how difficult it is for my employer to dish out the money and part with it. He's actually parting with money that is his, and he's giving it to me. I only appreciate that if I've had to work for that, and I understand, yes, he's parting with his money, but he got something else in return with which was of value, which was worth the money he gave me. And so says Reb Chaim Moisel Grudzinski, through business, through dealing with the world, that one's able to understand the Torah, that one's able to acquire the Torah, to really make the principles of the Torah part of you. But if you isolate yourself from the world, if you won't deal with the world, there's no way these things mean anything. You learn a Kenyan and a Mashiach and a Agbo and a this and a that, but you don't know what it means to earn anything because you've never worked for something. You know, so you're learning this, learning an Akko, and you get a check at the end of the month. That's fine. It's a bit difficult to make ends meet. My wife goes out and works a little bit as well. But you don't know what it is to slave and to give up your precious time where you would want to be learning, where you crave to be learning, and you've got to go out and you've got to work. You don't understand what that means. You don't understand what it means to save up for something and to buy something. It's a different thing altogether when you're in business. You must understand that we're talking about business in the broader sense. It doesn't necessarily mean the normal sense of business. It means dealing with people, giving and taking, relating to society. But Avraham Grudzinski goes one step further. And he says, the essence of business is in fact chesed. He says what one develops through business is the midah of chesed, the ability and the knowledge of how to do kindness. Because what's business all about? Business is anticipating the needs of a market. What's chesed all about? Anticipating the needs of another individual. Now, one can anticipate the needs of other individuals when you're not in business too, but the other guy doesn't hit you if you anticipate it wrong. So you can say in yeshiva, I've also got an opportunity to anticipate the needs of my friend. I must learn that I've got to walk into the room quietly if other people are sleeping. That's chesed. Firstly, it's not chesed, that's just derech eretz. There are not that many opportunities for chesed of the same degree. And secondly, and if you don't, he's not going to hit you. You're not going to be thrown out of the yeshiva for it. So you don't really acquire the full understanding of the importance of chesed, the vitality of it. In business, what happens if you don't anticipate the needs of the market? I'll sell them what I want to sell them, my tastes. I can't stand the tastes of the market. I want to sell them what I want to sell them. What happens? You go bankrupt and you've got no money to take home and your wife and your children starve. That's what happens in business. If you don't have the middle of chesed, the ability to anticipate accurately what the market needs before they even know. That's what you need for a business ability. That's chesed. Says Rabbi Avraham Grudzinski, but you're doing it for your own good after all. Why are you in business? You're not in business to do kindness to the world. You're in business to earn a living. So what kind of a chap is that? Says Rabbi Avraham Grudzinski, that doesn't matter. The din is that if a Jew takes charity money, takes tzedakah, and he puts it in a pushka, he puts it in a charity box, and he says, I'm giving this charity on condition my sick child recovers. That's it. The Gemara says, it's tzedakah gemura, it's absolute charity. Why? Because the Jew has done a charitable act, and if his child doesn't recover, he's not going to take the money out again. And she doesn't understand. Okay, that's it. I hope it didn't work. He's not going to feel resentful about the money he gave. He did a charitable act, and he accepts it as such. Says Rabbi Avraham Grudzinski, the same applies in business. Sure, you're going into business because you want to earn a living. But the fact is, what you're doing is charity. You're designing things to make life easier for the housewife. Washing powder that should wash the clothes quicker and whiter. A washing machine that can save her an extra 5 minutes. A Hoover that can vacuum, that she doesn't have to get on her hands and knees. You're constantly occupied in how can I make their lives easier. That's what they want. They want an easier life. I'm going to put my brains to making their life easier. And then comes the marketing of it, the advertising. Now I've got to tell the housewife that I have it available. There's no good in the chesed. I've developed a new device and she doesn't know about it. So now I've got to advertise and I spend money on the advertising. Sure, I expect the money back. But if it doesn't work, my bank gets upset with me. But I don't feel all that goodness for society and I got nothing back. Okay, it didn't work, it was a failure. But I don't resent the chesed, I don't resent the kindness. Therefore, says Rabbi Avraham Grudzinski, business, even where the profit motive is the motive, is a chesed. And not only that, says Rabbi Avraham Grudzinski, he says it's a mistake to think that it's a mitzvah, but business is a mitzvah because you're earning money which can help you to keep body and soul together. No, business is a mitzvah because of the chesed. And he says it's the biggest chesed that there can be, and he uses the following words. When you're busy not doing chesed with one person, or with two people, or with three people, in business you're doing chesed with the whole of society, with your whole environment you're doing chesed, you're doing kindness. Is there any chesed which is greater than that? And hence, says Rav Avraham Grudzinski, they call it Yeshuvo Shel Olam. You're occupied in building up the world. That's it, that's mitzvah. So one can begin to understand the view of Rabbi Yishmael. The Osafta de Gonecha, being involved in business, earning your living, is not just something you have to do b'dieved, because after all you've got to eat. Where are you going to eat from? No. The Osafta de Gonecha is a means of training yourself and developing yourself in certain qualities. Primarily in the quality of normality, because if you're abnormal in business, you go out of business. And secondarily in the quality of chesed, because if your chesed is off pitch, if your kindness is not accurate in business, you also go out of business. It's a hard, hard world. That's the way it operates. And that, from that one can learn an awful lot, and one can acquire an awful lot. And therefore one can understand, if you're learning properly, to the point that your whole fulfillment is in your learning, nevertheless, there has to be a v'asafta d'gonecha. Nevertheless, you have to go out and you have to earn a living. Again, I must point out that the v'asafta d'gonecha doesn't mean necessarily business in the normal sense. It means dealing with people, as opposed to hiding away from people. It means giving and taking, contributing towards the society in which you're living. It can be through teaching. Although, halachically, the teaching of Torah is not considered one of these things. One should do it in some other area. But it can be through many areas of dealing with the world, of giving and taking with the world, one can achieve this. And what area one chooses, that's a shaila that has to be asked. That's a halachic shaila. Means I've now got to choose an area. I'm learning, and I've learned, and now I've got to choose an area of the asafta de gonecha. Am I going to be a farmer, or am I going to use some other means of relating to the world and contributing to the world? Will it be through my Torah? Will it be through something else? That's a halachic shaila that has to be asked. That's a halachic matter that has to be clarified, because each the choice of a profession or a trade or a skill in the case of each individual depends on many factors which are unique to that individual. Finally, I just want to say that there's been a lot of confusion among a lot of people, and understandably so, as to what my view is to this whole thing. In other words, as to what I hold that the Torah view is. And some have said that it's the same as Reb Shimshon Raphael Hirsch's attitude of Torah and Derech Eretz. Of Torah with secular culture, the two go well together. That's not correct. Firstly, I don't hold of the principle, assuming we talk about Derech Eretz as this, as business, as dealing with people. And that's how we've talked about it this evening. Business is dealing with people. And it can be through business, or through a profession, or through one's Torah. You're a rov in a community. You're a teacher in a school. Whatever it is, there are ways one can deal with a community. Dealing with a community through one of these skills, let's even assume that's what we're going to call Derech Eretz. And I don't like the phrase of Torah in Derech Eretz. Torah with Derech Eretz go well together. No. That Derech Eretz is part of your Torah. It's not that this is your Torah and this is your Derech Eretz and put them together. No. If you're earning your living properly, and if you've asked the halachic shaila as to how you should be doing it, and you're in the right profession, and you're doing it properly and you're relating correctly, and everything you're doing is according to halacha, and you're becoming a Talmid Chacham at the same time, then that is part of your Torah. It's Hanheg Bahem Minhag Derech Eretz. use your Torah in the world. Apply your Torah to the business world as well. A quarter of Shulchan Aruch is about business law. Take that Shulchan Aruch and put it into practice. That's what Hanheg Mahin Lahim Bahim Minag Derech Eretz means. Secondly, the view of Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch appears to be much more that there is cultural value in secular knowledge. And that isn't so. There is no cultural value in secular knowledge except in the sense of Chochmah. There's wisdom in secular studies which can be useful. But not cultural knowledge in terms of Torah or anything like that. Whatever cultural knowledge one needs, one finds inside the Torah. And the purpose of a university training primarily is that of a technical college. They don't have universities anymore, unfortunately. They used to have universities, and then they had fewer. There was Oxford and Cambridge until fairly recently, but today even Oxford and Cambridge is a technical college. You go to get a skill. You don't learn to educate yourself. You don't go there to educate yourself and to become a great human being like it used to be in the old days. You go to get a skill. Someone has to get a skill. If one goes to university to get a skill, whereby through that skill, through which you will able to be v'asafta de gonecho, it's through that that you're going to communicate with the world. It's through that that you're going to give and take with the world. Then okay, that's something that you need as part of your asafta de gonecho. Not as an ideal rounding off of a human being, like a girl must go to finishing school, and if she hasn't, she's not fully rounded. So we will never say that a Talmid Chochem must go to university, and if he doesn't, he's not fully rounded. No. Talmid Chochem gets his full roundedness in Torah. That's all he needs. But he might choose to become a shoemaker, or he might choose to become a tailor, or he might choose to become a civil engineer, or a lawyer, or a doctor, or whatever it is, to be his means of the Asafta de Gonecho. That's how I'm going to establish my channel with the world. Because I don't have the oratory to be a rabbi of a big community, and I don't have the personality to stand in front of a classroom of kids to teach, and I faint at the sight of blood, so I can't be a shofet. So what am I going to do? Just sit and take charity, chas v'shor. I've got to have a means of earning a living, so I'll become a doctor, or I'll become a lawyer, whatever it is. That's how I'm going to contribute to the world, that's how I'm going to relate to the world, that's how I'm going to establish my normality in the world, and my give and take relationship with the world. That's fine. The only thing I have said is that one must be careful not to belittle secular knowledge, because there is chokhmah in secular knowledge. And sometimes, one, through secular knowledge, one's able to understand a lot in chazal, a lot of Torah that one would not otherwise understand. We had an example of that only this week, where we had a piece of chumash with Meforshim, where without Einstein's theory of relativity, ordinary people like us couldn't understand it. No ways. It's only because we've been exposed in a popular and watered-down way to what Einstein's theory of relativity was that we could understand that Ramban. All of a sudden it clicks, oh, that's what he's talking about. But if you'd never heard it, it would be difficult to learn it out of the Ramban, although the Ramban knew Einstein's theory of relativity without Einstein, but we're not the Ramban. That doesn't mean to say that you've got to go to university and become a physicist before you can learn the Ramban. No. But it means don't belittle physics. Get hold of a physicist and ask him what's it all about, and in 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 2 hours he'll tell you the essence of it. One has to relate to the whole world. One has to occupy oneself with concerns of the whole world. Don't cut yourself off from the world. That's Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai's approach, and we don't paskin like Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Halacha is paskin like Rabbi Yishmael, that the din is v'asafta de gonecho, giving and taking with the world, is part, ideally part of Torah, not just b'diyevet part of Torah. The Gemara does finish off over here by saying that many have tried Rabbi Yishmael's way and they have succeeded, and many have tried Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai's way and they have not succeeded, which indicates that there's not a clear psak halacha. There are people that have to follow Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai's way. You have a Vilna Gaon. You have people like this in every generation even, who can achieve the ultimate, in fact, by cutting themselves off totally from the world. But they're unique individuals. They're the ultimate of intellectuals. There are people who, through their own intellectual ability, are able to achieve everything we achieve by our intellect plus the various other things that we do in the world. So one can't become dogmatic about it. Yes, there are individuals that have to follow Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai's way. The majority of people have to follow Rabbi Yishmael's way. That means that one has to become a Ben Torah, one has to become a Talmid Chochem, one has to know what learning is all about. One has to be a Im Shamoa Tishma, one has to learn one's learning, and one has to apply that method to everything one does and reads and learns, to go over it and deepen one's knowledge in it and understanding it fully. In addition to that, there's V'asafta de Gonecho. One has to give and take in the world. One has to contribute to Yishuv Ha'olam. One has to contribute to the normal process of the evolution of society and the development of mankind.